Welcome to the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast, a view of culture, current events, and politics through a biblical lens. Brought to you by Compassion International, a worldwide ministry bringing hope and Jesus to children in need. Visit CrawfordMediaGroup.net and click on the Compassion logo to sponsor a child. And now, here are your hosts, Neil Boron, Bob Duco, Roger Marsh, and John Rush.
Very happy to be back with you folks for another week of the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast with Neil, Roger, John, myself, Bob Duco. Gentlemen, how are you this week?
Doing well, Bob.
How are you?
Oh, hello, Bob. Doing great, thanks. Okay, well, obviously there's still a lot of political things going on. And just as a reminder to everybody listening, this is not all politics that we talk about. Trust me, there's going to be a lot of times on this podcast that we talk about non-political things as well, theological things, cultural things. But obviously politics has been kind of the elephant in the room lately. And it still is this week and probably next week with the impeachment going on. This has been announced that, of course, the impeachment trial is going to go forward. Mitch McConnell is letting this thing go forward. The Democrats are trying to grind Donald Trump into the ground as much as possible. They want to, in my honest opinion, embarrass him, humiliate him, put him in the history books as the only twice impeached president ever. Add to that, they want to try to keep him from running for office again by putting that as part of the impeachment. And then on top of all of that, in my honest opinion, I think they want to keep Donald Trump's name relevant for as long as possible so that he can be the boogeyman that the Democrats can all unite around and point their finger at. That way it distracts the American people from the true leftist Marxist agenda of the Democratic Party and just how radical they are. That's kind of my take of what's going on here. But I'd like to go around the table, first of all, and just get you guys' thoughts on having an impeachment on Donald Trump after he's left office. He's a private citizen. I thought Rand Paul gave a great speech from the floor of the Senate the other day on how ridiculous this is. And he actually got 45 senators out of 50, 45 Republicans, including Mitch McConnell, to vote that there's no reason this should be going forward. This is really not constitutional. That tells me the best that the Democrats are going to be able to hope for is peeling off 5 of the 17 votes they need for conviction. No surprise, Mitt Romney, Ben Sasse, Lisa Murkowski, Susan Collins, and Pat Toomey. So much for unity, President Biden and the Democratic Party. But let's just kind of go around the table and get your thoughts and take on what I consider at least to be the absurdity of continuing to do stuff like this. Let's get started, if we could, with maybe Roger Marsh from the bottom line out of the People's Republic of California. Roger, what do you think about this? I'm thinking this could actually backfire on the Democrats.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that the fact that they had the vote yesterday as to whether or not the impeachment was constitutional, obviously all the Democrats and the independents are going to go in favor of it. But, you know, the reality is, I think the Democrats keep overplaying their hand. Hey, we won the election. We got 80 million votes. Everybody agrees with us. Now all we need is unity. And that just really, they keep misspelling conformity every time they keep talking about unity. I mean, the reality is, I mean, the fact that you knew that Romney was going to go that way and Murkowski was going to go away, it was such a non-issue. But I love the fact that Rand Paul did what he did, got this to the, kind of a test the weather type of vote. And 45 Republicans said, nope, not going to happen. So the fact that you need 17, you've only got 5, here's your DOA right here. It's not going to happen. It's a silly exercise. Even the fact that John Roberts isn't going to be presiding over all this, it's a clown car. But Bob, I think you nailed all the reasons why the Democrats want this so perfectly at the head of what your statement there. The biggest one, I think, is, well, I don't think there's the biggest one anymore. First, I thought, well, maybe it's the second time he's being impeached, and that'll make him look super bad. He'll be in double secret probation on his permanent record forever. There's so many more important things to life. Can we look at the cavalcade of executive orders that are coming out of Joe Biden's office right now? I mean, all of this is just a dodge, but it's like you said, how do they keep Donald Trump in the media? The media wants this, the Democrats want this, but I doubt seriously the American people want this.
And by the way, just on a side note, can I just say, for all the people who say that Republican presidents and Donald Trump and such, abuse of power. And by the way, Joe Biden, when he was campaigning, was criticizing the use of executive orders and such. Here's some numbers. Bill Clinton, in his first week in office, issued zero executive orders. George W. Bush, in his first week in office, issued zero executive orders. Barack Obama issued five. Donald Trump issued four. Joe Biden, in his first 5 days, issued 21 executive orders. And I'm not hearing anybody talking about what an abuse of power that is and blah, blah, blah. If this were Trump doing 21, that would be impeachment number three. But anyway, John Rush, Rush to Reason out of Denver, Colorado. Your thoughts on some of the things Roger was saying and this impeachment going forward, which, by the way, can I just add, John Roberts has said, no, I'm not doing this.
Right.
So now
right.
they have a partisan, Patrick Leahy, who's already on record as saying that he's decided that Donald Trump is going to be impeached. And that's the guy, that's the judge presiding, right. if you will, over top of this thing. How can this not be a clown show, as Roger said?
It will be. And I think everything Roger said is spot on. And I think that if I were them, I would be looking at this and the fact that, you know, John Roberts wasn't even willing to preside. Basically, let's face it, guys, the Supreme Court is essentially saying, you guys have nothing here. They can't say that. I understand that. But really, in essence, they did. Unfortunately, the left isn't listening to what he just said. What they should have said is, oh, we don't have a Supreme Court justice to preside over this. I guess that means we really don't have a case. Let's drop it and move on and get something else accomplished. But to your point earlier, you know, Bob and Roger both, this is not just a clown show, but this is a orange man bad. We've got to make sure we continue to drum this up. We've got to keep this going. There's no way we can let this die. And I would hope at some point the American public would wake up. I mean, 75 million of us already have, but you know there's going to be some others in the middle that are thinking to themselves, what in the world are you guys doing? There's much bigger fish to fry right now than this. Now, me as a conservative, I look at this and say, great, I hope you guys waste as much time doing this as possible because the alternative is even much worse. So you know what? Go waste your time doing this. It's not going to go anywhere. Rand Paul already proved that. This is a done deal already. But if they want to waste the next couple of weeks doing this and not do other legislative measures, fine by me.
You know, Neil Boron, of course, Neil Boron live out of Buffalo, New York. It does seem, Neil, that if I were a Democratic strategist, I would be saying to the Democratic Party right now, here's the smart thing. At least create a perception that you're above the fray and use that 45 vote to realize it's not going to work and just say, you know something, we need to move forward. We need to have unity in this country. And so we are actually now calling for the impeachment trial to halt. If Joe Biden said that, to me, that's the best thing they could do to try to salvage some semblance of civility in Washington. But if they continue going down this road, I see Donald Trump actually catching some sympathy backlash possibly. And if anything else, that sense of Democrats being exposed as the non-unity, petty, vindictive, all the negative kind of things that they have tried to brand Donald Trump as being.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, what a shell game, actually, because, you know, I think the vast majority of the American people are largely unaware of the fact that Hawkeye Bob Duco caught earlier, that 21 executive orders have been signed by Biden during his first week in office. And look at the nature of what, you know, what those orders represent, the liberal agenda on steroids, obviously, right. Progressive liberal agenda. And so all of the attention being on, the vast majority of the attention either being on the impeachment or ongoing issues related to coronavirus keeps all the attention off what's really happening in Washington, D.C. But you know, it's just kind of sad, actually grieves my heart, is the idea of how partisan this country has become. Now, I'm not saying that I agree with much of what liberals or progressives had to say. I agree with almost zero of it, and I think we're all in the same camp on that. But, you know, when the vote comes down, let me back up. When in a constitutional republic, we elect people to represent our core values, the things that matter to us, especially in the House. You know, you're dealing with small districts, really, you know, relatively small districts of people that have specific needs in our country, and their representatives are supposed to go and represent them, you know, before Congress. But then we always see these votes coming down where all the Democrats are on one side and all the Republicans are on the other, which is why, by the way, having Kamala Harris as the vice president to cast the final vote in the Senate really matters. But so then you come to an issue like, hey, is this impeachment thing even constitutional? Now, John Roberts apparently doesn't think so. He jumped off the bandwagon because part of impeachment is about removing someone from office. Well, he's not in office anymore. Right. Apparently, the American people removed Donald Trump from office, so it ought to be a done deal. But what are we going to see in this? We're going to see all the Democrats voting one way on the issue of whether or not impeachment is even constitutional, and all but five Republicans voting the exact opposite way. And so where does that leave us? That's kind of like saying, okay, you know, you're in the travel industry and you want people to come to Florida, and somebody says, hey, what's the temperature in Florida right now? Well, if it's 57 degrees, that's not going to bode well. So you say, well, it's 80 degrees. I mean, you just make up stuff. Do the Democrats actually believe that this is constitutional? And are the Republicans just kind of holding their noses, of the 45 out of the 50 holding their noses, saying, well, you know, no, it's unconstitutional, but I'm going to lie about it. I have no idea where all that goes, but it's just kind of sad to see that we've come to that point in the country. And the other thing is, I'm just curious what you guys think about Mitch McConnell, because I don't know what's going on there. I don't even know what to think about Mitch McConnell on this whole thing. Yeah, it's confusing.
No, you know what? That's actually a very good point to go, and a very good place to take this too. I'll tell you what. Let's do this. Hang on. We're going to continue this discussion next here on the National Crawford Roundtable podcast. I do want to take a moment right now and ask everybody listening, though, in the middle of everything going on, politics and everything else, how many of you have children that haven't eaten anything today? I mean, stop and think about that a moment. What would it be like if your child was coming to you crying and saying, my stomach hurts because I haven't eaten anything today or yesterday or even the day before? See, Compassion International, folks, is a Christian ministry that's been around for 68 years, and they're set up all over the world in the poorest villages on planet Earth. And you know what they do? They bring food, all the hot food these kids want to eat every single day. Food, clean drinking water, medical care, education, teach them to use computers, whatever clothing they need, but also the gospel of Jesus Christ preached to these kids. They're prayed with, they're prayed for, they're in worship services. But here's the thing. It takes money for this, folks. $38 a month. You can sponsor one child and get one more child into the Compassion program right there where they live for just $38 a month. Would you prayerfully consider doing that today? It's $1.25 a day, everybody. And here's how easy it is. Just go online right now to CrawfordMediaGroup.net. That's CrawfordMediaGroup.net. Click on the Compassion International link. You'll see a whole bunch of children's pictures there. Look through them. Pick one, pick two, whatever you can afford to do, okay? And you're going to change that child's life. CrawfordMediaGroup.net. Do that now if you would. So we continue this National Crawford Roundtable podcast with Roger Marsh, Neil Boron, John Rush, myself, Bob Duco. And, you know, the Mitch McConnell question, Neil, that you brought up. Before we even address that, can I just say something about the unity and the moving forward thing? And I know this is going to be coming to a defense of Trump, but bear with me here. I don't know if anybody remembers this, but when Trump was elected in 2016 and then he was inaugurated January 20th of 2017, there were a lot of Trump supporters that said, okay, now is the time to finally make Hillary Clinton pay for the crimes that she committed. She put top secret classified information on unsecured servers to be hacked by her enemies around the world. Other people go to jail for stuff like that. She deleted 33,000 emails. She obstructed justice. She perjured herself before Congress multiple times. Everybody else goes to prison for stuff like that. And most people don't remember that when Donald Trump was inaugurated, he actually defied his base and said, I am not going to support pursuing Hillary Clinton. The best thing for us to do is just try to heal and move on and move forward. That's what he said. Now, what happened is the Democrats smacked away his hand holding that olive branch and continued to go after him with the Russia collusion and the continued spying or whatever. And then he was like, you know what? Okay, then fine. And he put his boxing gloves back on. But Donald Trump tried to do some healing going forward and was not originally wanting to go after Hillary Clinton. That, in my honest opinion, guys, is what Joe Biden ought to be doing right now. Not to mention the fact that Donald Trump hasn't actually committed crimes that Hillary Clinton did in the light of day. I just had to get that off my chest. Let's talk a little bit about what Neil was asking regarding Mitch McConnell. John Rush, were you surprised at all that Mitch McConnell wasn't part of the Romney Five and decided to go ahead with Rand Paul and say, yeah, I'm pretty much declaring myself on the other side of this.
No. No, I think he knows where he needs to play at that moment in time, and he knew that play for him yesterday was, or whatever day it was, I think it was yesterday. I think he knew that that was the play he needed to make to you know, to save face, if you would, and maybe even realize that he made a mistake in the last decision that he made, although that's probably doubtful. But Mitch is a smart guy. He knows what card he needs to play at what time, and he knew this is the time he needed to do that. That's my opinion.
Yeah. Hey, Roger, I'm curious what you think about this crazy, wacky theory. I know this sounds stupid, but I really suspect that Mitch McConnell and some of these establishment Republicans, I suspect that they actually prefer the Democrats to be in power. I know that sounds nuts, but that if the Democrats are in power, then at least they can continue having their country club meetings. They can continue to pretend to be the opposition because they get reelected by telling their constituents, hey, I'm fighting against the Democrats as hard as I can. But as soon as they actually get power, it's like the dog catching the car. It's like, rut-row, now what do we do with it? They don't really want to govern as conservatives. I don't think Mitch McConnell and the Republican establishment want the Republican Party to be as conservative as the plank lists it. I don't think they want them to be in bed with the evangelical Christian community, with the pro-Israel community, with the pro-life, right-to-life community. I don't think they want that to be the brand of the Republican Party. Donald Trump dragged them there, and that's one of the reasons they had a problem with this. I think a lot of these guys are just more comfortable being in the minority and telling the Democrats, I'll tell you what, give us a few bones so we can save face with our constituents. You guys go ahead and be control, and we'll be the opposition party and have friendly cocktail dinners afterward. And that way we'll perpetuate our power and our reelections for the next 40 years. Kind of a cynical attitude, I know. But Roger, what's your thought on this and just your take of Mitch McConnell in general, as Neil was asking?
Well, I'm still waiting for your crazy theory.
Okay,
quite frankly, I'm right there with you with all of it. I mean, all you have to do is look at John Boehner and 800,000 votes to repeal Obamacare,
right,
knowing it was going to die in the Senate. All you have to do is look at Paul Ryan as the Speaker of the House and then going, oh, 2 years later, you know, I think I'm going to retire. I'm going to join 40 other Republicans in the House and retire right now because Donald Trump's here? You have a Republican supermajority? Why would you retire? Oh, I know why. Because now you're in charge. Now the spotlight's on you.
Right.
All of those campaign promises that you made, no, knowing that you would not be able to fulfill them, and you didn't care. McConnell's had to endure that for the past 4 years. So, I mean, he's part of that. I love that country club Republican mentality. It's ridiculous. I want to see it gone. I'm glad that there are still guys like Ted Cruz and Mike Lee in the Senate who are saying, and Lee apparently is, you know, possibly not going to be around for much longer. But, you know, the idea that there are people who want... We want to vote for people who are going to go do what they said they were going to do on the campaign trail. And for too long, the GOP has been able to wander under this dark cloud of Democratic leadership saying, well, I guess if we can get a few scraps, we'll be okay. Well, guess what? When you were given a majority, you blew it. So quite frankly, now you're back in the position where you want to be. And McConnell is a little uncomfortable, it seems like, being in that spot again because everybody knows the gig is up.
Right. Neil, what do you think? What's your take on Mitch McConnell? And for that matter, if I can use the cliche, the battle for the soul of the Republican Party. How is the Republican Party going to be defined going forward?
The Republican Party has a soul? Really?
I say that in finger quotes.
Yeah, I mean, in past conversations here on the roundtable, we've talked about stuff similar to this. And, you know, the question has to be, who are these people fighting for? Are they fighting for the American people? Or are they fighting for themselves? And which is why on one level, I mean, just bear with me here for a second. On one level, the question has to be asked, when you see party line votes, like there's going to come a vote sooner or later. It's 51 Democrats against 50 Republicans. We're going to see that happen. And then you say, well, wait a minute, is there any middle ground here? Is there anybody being represented in this other than the Democratic Party or the Republican Party? Like, what does this vote represent when you get a 51-50? Is anybody even having real dialogue about what the issues happen to be and how they affect real Americans? But then within each party, and let's just talk about the Republican Party because you brought it up. Man, if you're right about this, and I suspect you are, I can't say anything to refute what you're saying, but if that's right, then that just underscores why we're wasting our time hoping that people like Mitch McConnell are going to do the right thing. Now, I'm not blaming him entirely, but what I'm saying is if that's really part of the system, then we're not being represented. Our values aren't being represented. And it's all a joke. Because if just getting reelected and remaining in power, though you remain the minority in Congress, like you're okay with never being able to actually enact a true agenda, like, for instance, overturning Obamacare, as you guys mentioned earlier, then what's the point? And I just think that, man, if that's really true and if that continues to come to light, if that is the truth and it comes to light, then forget it. The Republican Party's finished. And this is why I said earlier, Democrats have an attack dog mentality. They went to work. They got election laws changed unconstitutionally, I believe. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they went after it. They went after a victory. They strategized and they got it done somehow. Was it fraudulent? Was there abuse of power and stuff going on? Sure, we can talk about that all day long. The fact is Joe Biden got sworn in as president on January 20th. They accomplished what they were trying to do. What's the Republican strategy to win in the midterm elections 2022, or more so the presidential election in 2024? Is there going to be a strategy, or are we going to be okay with coming in second place? I think, quite frankly, it's terrifying to think that way.
I know. And you know what? We do need the Ted Cruz's and those that are willing to fight for principles and policy positions and such. Unfortunately, so much of the Republican Party, their strategy, their political plank is let's get reelected every 2 years and every 6 years. And the best way to do that is to be the opposition, the gentle opposition against the Democrats that are in charge. It's so frustrating. But we're going to continue this discussion coming up next. But I do want to remind everybody listening again, okay? Don't forget about these hungry children that we've been talking about. When you hear me mention Compassion International, these children are just waiting for somebody to be willing to sponsor them for $38 a month. And you need to know, it's so easy to do, too. If you'll just go to CrawfordMediaGroup.net, CrawfordMediaGroup.net, and click on the Compassion link right there, you'll see pictures of a whole bunch of children that have been waiting. Their pictures have been taken. They're waiting for Compassion to come to them and say, we found you a sponsor. And you know what you can do? You can go to bed every night knowing that that child not only knows you by name, is writing letters to you, coloring pictures for you, thanking you for doing this, but you go to bed every night knowing that child won't be hungry anymore. Every day they get all the hot food they want. Clean drinking water, medical care, whatever clothing they need. They're in classrooms being educated, taught to use computers. But most importantly, they're being prayed with. They're being prayed for. They're being taught about Jesus Christ. They get a Bible in their own language. They're surrounded by a bunch of Christian teachers and pastors who love them and care for them. And they know that you're the hero that's paying for all of this. Would you sponsor one of these kids right now? It's so easy to do. Just go right now to CrawfordMediaGroup.net. It's $38 a month, folks, buck and a quarter a day. Go now to CrawfordMediaGroup.net. Sponsor one of these kids if you would. We're continuing this discussion here on the National Crawford Roundtable with Neil, Roger, John, myself, Bob Duco. And one of the things I do want to ask you guys about, though, we talked about this before, and I just want to revisit this a little bit. This notion of unity and whether this impeachment trial is going to backfire on the Democrats. You know, it occurs to me, somebody brought up, John or Roger, I can't remember, somebody brought up all of the executive orders that Joe Biden has signed, and I threw out the numbers here. When Joe Biden talks about unity, and John Rush, I want to throw this over to you. When Joe Biden talks about unity and those words are thrown out that way, I guess I'm thinking to myself, can you name one? Can Jake Tapper name one executive order or one executive action that Joe Biden has taken so far that Republicans and Democrats disagree on, but that conservatives are pleased with and liberals are upset with? Even one. Is there one example of a bone, John, that's been thrown to conservatives, or with 100% consistency has everything been, in, if it's a difference of opinion politically, everything 100% has been for the Democrats and the liberals and zero for the evangelical Christians, the pro-lifers, the conservatives, the right wing, the anything like that? Not even one bone. Unless I'm missing something, John. We got about 60 seconds to the break.
No, yeah.
That doesn't make sense.
No, No, we're getting to the bottom of the hour, or you know, bottom of the half hour, and I realize that. But yeah, to your point, Bob, no. In fact, I would go one step further and say a lot of the things that he's done have really been to poke the eye of conservatives and especially conservative Christians. We spoke briefly in last week's podcast about the, you know, Department of Health head, you know, the transgender individual, mm-hmm. the sham, I call him, because I don't know what to call this individual. Right. The reality is, you know, he's picking things and doing things not only on the executive side, but who he's even putting in positions of power, in my opinion, to do nothing but just poke the eye of conservative Christians.
Absolutely. Well, we've got a lot more, folks, to talk about in the second half of this podcast. And if you want to hear the second half, now, if you're listening to us on regular radio, you can listen to the second half, everybody, online. And how you do that is you go to CrawfordMediaGroup.net. By the way, we'd love a nice 5-star rating on maybe your Apple app or Stitcher, TuneIn, or more. I mean, there's a lot of places you can listen to the second half of this online at the podcast. And by the way, if you do go to CrawfordMediaGroup.net, again, please consider clicking on Compassion International, sponsoring one of those kids for $38 a month, one of those hungry kids. All right, but we're going to continue the second half of this National Crawford Roundtable podcast next.
This has been a Crawford Broadcasting production.
Continue in the second half of the National Crawford Roundtable with Neil Boron of Neil Boron Live out of Buffalo, New York, Roger Marsh from The Bottom Line from the People's Republic of California, John Rush of Rush to Reason out of Denver, Colorado, myself, Bob Duco from The Bob Duco Show out of Detroit. We're talking about the impeachment trial that's now scheduled to take place in the Senate. The Democrats are going forward with this. This is part of their unity agenda, apparently. And in talking about this and the trial going forward, let's go ahead and talk about the merits of the case itself, if we could, because it looks like a trial is going to go on. Patrick Leahy was taken to the hospital on Wednesday of this week, and so we certainly hope and pray that he's going to be okay. But we know that there's going to be a partisan Democrat pro-impeachment, already decided as guilty verdict senator who's going to be presiding as the, quote, judge, because John Roberts of the Supreme Court realizes, nah, I'm not going to go forward with this. But let's examine the merits of the case. Is Donald Trump really guilty of insurrection and provoking an insurrection against the United States of America? I mean, John Rush, you can say what you want about Trump. You could say anything at all about how inarticulate he is and how sloppy he can be sometimes with his rhetoric. But I'm having a hard time understanding how, quote, as you go peacefully and patriotically to march to the Capitol to let your voices be heard. I'm having a hard time understanding how peacefully and patriotically is right. provoking an insurrection.
Well, it's not. And they're grasping at straws. A lot of what we talked about in the first half hour and just what they're trying to do with this whole impeachment process in the first place. And I have a hard time believing that any of them really feel like this is going to go anywhere. To me, this is all, you know, just smoke and mirrors. And I think the thing we need to be careful of is making sure that we don't get caught up in the same thing the left did when it comes to these things. And what I mean by that is, you know, Donald Trump was sort of the master at having smoke and mirrors on one side and yet doing all sorts of things legislatively and executively even, and handling things on the side when the press wasn't paying any attention. I think that's one thing as conservatives we need to be careful of here as well, is not to get, you know, too caught up in all of the Democrat drama, if you would, and making sure that we're paying attention to the other business that's going on to make sure that we're not, you know, under the same trap that they got in with Donald Trump. Make sure the reverse doesn't happen. But to your point, Bob, no, there's no basis here. In fact, there's even been some facts that have come out recently on some of those that actually went into the Capitol itself, and the fact that a lot of that was instigated by, you know, BLM and Antifa. And yes, there's some facts, folks out there, some of you on the left listening. Yes, there's some factual statements from those individuals that even say so. So the reality is, I think as they keep digging more and more on that end of things. And by the way, guys, I feel like anybody that did the damage and broke into the Capitol, you guys all know my feelings on that. They should be prosecuted. They should go to jail. The horned guy saying that, you know, Trump incited me and he's the reason why I broke in, that guy's a Looney Tune. And and needs to go, you know, needs to get locked up, and his his attorney is acting like Saul Goodman from Breaking Bad. I mean, the reality is that guy is a Looney Tune as well. And no, to me, Bob, no, there's nothing here. This is all smoke and mirrors.
Roger Marsh, your take. I guess I'm having a hard time getting past the not only him using the words peacefully and patriotically, but then secondly, the fact that we now know the FBI has said that this was pre-planned days in advance. So how could Donald Trump's words from a podium incite something that was already pre-planned by a couple of hundred idiots?
Yeah, you know, the idea that the president said something that day in that moment that incited the riot is really ridiculous. It's a big stretch. Now, the president's rhetoric being misinterpreted by, you know, crazy feather hat guy and this, that, and the other thing, sure. And that's one place where I'm a little disappointed that the Trump team didn't do more in terms of saying, hey, look, we're going to watch out. There's going to be some fringe nut jobs who are going to show up. And there will be operators, too. I mean, as you mentioned, the FBI investigation isn't about the school teacher and the doctor and the nurse's assistant, whatever, who all showed up there and wound up being turned like the one guy whose son turned him in, because my dad was there supporting Donald Trump. The real problem is the insurrectionists, who will look at any excuse they possibly can to take over any kind of event like this and make it what it is. And it's just the whole thing is lunacy. I wanted to circle back to something Neil said, because he was talking about the vote in the Senate with regard to the impeachment first and foremost, and then it's going to be a 51-50 vote, because it'll, if it does come up deadlock, you know, Kamala Harris is vice president now, she will go ahead, you know, would cast a tie-breaking vote in any of these types of things. And I couldn't help but notice, I don't know what it's like in your guys' states, but here in the People's Republic, 51-50 means a lot to us, because it's the California law code for temporary involuntary psychiatric commitment of individuals who present a danger to themselves or other people, and you could be locked up for 72 hours for doing it. So someone says someone's going crazy. We use that term 51-50 all the time. As a matter of fact, Van Halen had a record called 51-50, and they were like, yeah, we're crazy. You know. So when you said that, Neil, I'm sorry, just a little California humor, but I had to throw it in, because I think the Senate is going crazy right now in terms of saying, well, we've got to impeach him because, he incited this thing. And, you know, hundreds of thousands of people were there, people that I know that you know were there singing songs, hymns, and spiritual songs, and wanting election integrity to be preserved, that a couple hundred nut jobs broke windows and did things that they, you're right, John, they should be prosecuted and punished to the fullest extent of the law. But is it worthy of a second impeachment? I don't think so.
Well, I just want to know when Kamala Harris is going to get impeached for going on Stephen Colbert's show, national television, after one of the riots, one of the many riots that took place in 2020, and actually said, hey, these people are not going to let up, and they should not let up. Now, in all fairness, I know she wasn't talking about the people that were smashing windows and hitting police in the head with bricks. She was talking about the peaceful protesters. But why isn't anybody saying, you have a responsibility to know that there's crazies out there that will take it to the riot level? And by the way, we're not saying that you should anticipate that that might happen. This has happened already repeatedly. So no Democrats have been called on the carpet for their kind of rhetoric, which quite frankly is even stronger than what Donald Trump said on January 6th. And somehow he's being impeached for insurrection. So it's just a massive double standard here at play, Neil Boron, as far as I'm concerned, but your take on that.
Well, I just got a couple things to say. First of all, what was that? What'd you call him? Furry hat horn guy or something?
Somebody in serious need of counseling.
Come on. That was unbelievable, Roger.
I hate that guy's become a celebrity. I really do.
I know.
Me too. Thanks, Bob.
He's eating
this.
Well,
you haven't seen him at your QAnon meetings, Neil? I mean, come
yeah,
on.
Yeah, good. Good one.
I agree with you guys. By the way, I told you on one of the previous podcasts, I watch ABC News with David Muir whenever I can, because I want to know what the other side's thinking, because I don't know of a more liberal newscast. However, the other day I was listening, and, you know, the president's being impeached for incitement of insurrection and using words like we're going to march to the Capitol. I'll be with you. And if we want to preserve democracy, we got to fight like hell. And he did say those things. However, you're 100% right, Bob. He also said, we're going to march peacefully and patriotically. I don't believe for a minute, and I said this on previous podcasts, I don't believe for a minute that the president wanted people to break into the Capitol or people to die or for the violence to occur that occurred. I do think it was short-sighted or naive to think that you can have a rally called Stop the Steal. What was the purpose of it? Like, it wasn't a going away party because they were there to stop the steal. So then what were you hoping to accomplish? So is that incitement of insurrection? No, I don't think it rises to that level. And so I don't think he's going to be convicted because I don't think he had any purpose or plan in mind. I don't think he was part of inciting an insurrection. But I kind of think that if the Democrats actually wanted to win, you know, or have a more solid basis, legally speaking, for impeaching him and being successful in that venture, that they should have gone after dereliction of duty on this one point. Now, I'm not saying I necessarily agree with it, but I think it's a stronger case to say that, you know, the president is sworn to uphold the Constitution. And so when he was chiding Mike Pence to do what the Constitution doesn't allow him to do, you might be able to make a case on that to say, wait a minute, he was asking his own vice president to do something unconstitutional and proclaim him the president. By the way, also putting Mike Pence in a position of being one, like, okay, Donald Trump, you're going to be the president, and I'm one breath away from being the president, and I'm making this decision, thus saith Mike Pence. I think it was naive, silly, foolish, ridiculous, whatever, for President Trump to even suggest such a thing, and I think they'd have a stronger case on dereliction of duty, but they didn't choose that. Do I think he needs to be impeached? No, and I think it's foolish after leaving office that they're even talking about this kind of thing. If it had happened beforehand, maybe somebody would say, well, hey, you made your bed, you know, you ought to lie in it. But my take all along was that he should have thought about potentially stepping aside, resigning, just saying, hey, look, this was not my plan. I've got 12 days in office or whatever. I don't want to be connected with this. I'm going to step aside for those kind of reasons. But he definitely, in my mind, they should have looked at a possible censure, if anything. The whole idea of impeachment's ridiculous, and it's going nowhere, and it's going to be completely partisan. I mean, if a few Republicans join in because they don't want to lose in the next time they're up for an election or something, you're going to see that kind of thing happen. Otherwise, it's going to be a party-line vote, and it's a big charade, and it's a waste of time.
You know, John Rush, to what Neil was saying here, and then also just about the merits of this, and I know we got to take a break here in a minute, but I do have to say, that when I look at some of the rhetoric that Democrats have spoken, and I'm not doing whataboutism here. I'm not saying, well, because whataboutism is justifying wrong behavior by pointing at other people's wrong behavior. What I'm saying is the stuff that Donald Trump said, we got to, quote, fight like hell and such, I'm saying that that's not really wrong and shocking because those kind of metaphors are used, that language is used repeatedly in speeches, Democrat and Republican alike, and nobody clutches their pearls over stuff like that and suggests that that's somehow responsible for the kind of language. Mm-hmm. Kamala Harris and all of the Democrats, they were saying the very same kind of stuff. We need to fight. We're going to fight for this country. We're going to take it back, whatever. And nobody connected that to the riots that took place. Nobody said that Bernie Sanders should be impeached, John, because he said the Republican health care plan for the uninsured is that you die. Now, that's what he said. And then that guy, that gunman, showed up trying to do a massacre at the ballpark, shooting a bunch of Republicans and almost killing Steve Scalise. And as the guy was shooting, the reports are that he yelled out, this is for health care, and he was a Bernie Sanders supporter. Okay? Is anybody connecting Bernie Sanders' words to that guy or Cory Booker saying you need to get up in the face of Congress people or Maxine Waters and the kind of stuff that she called for people to do against Trump's cabinet? And as I said, Kamala Harris saying, hey, these people aren't going to stop and they shouldn't stop, talking about the leftist protests. So I guess, John, I'm just having a hard time with those who look at Donald Trump saying, we need to get out there and, you know, fight like hell, all right, that suddenly becomes dangerous rhetoric. No, it's not. That's common terminology that everybody in politics uses, and I just think it's dishonest to attach that now after the fact to a couple of hundred idiots. But I'll throw it to you, and I know we got to take a break.
Oh, I agree. And let's do that. We'll take a quick break. We'll come right back. You're listening to the National Crawford Roundtable.
Learn how to walk the narrow path with Steve Gregg. With over 40 years of studying the Bible, Steve Gregg is passionate about teaching you how to apply scriptural wisdom to every aspect of your life. Listen to The Narrow Path on your local Crawford Broadcasting Station or online at thenarrowpath.com. The Narrow Path is 100% listener supported. Please keep this vital ministry going with your generous financial support. And let them know you heard about The Narrow Path on the National Crawford Roundtable podcast.
And we're back, National Crawford Roundtable. Myself, Bob, Neil, and Roger, and no, Everything, Bob, you said is correct. There's so many things, not just in politics, but there's so many things that a lot of us say, even us on air. You know, we say all sorts of things. It doesn't mean we're trying to incite anything. It doesn't mean that we're trying to, you know, take down the country or take down the White House or take down the Capitol. But we believe in our country. We love our country. We want to see what's best for our country. And I realize that in their own way, the left is doing the same thing, although I think they have a different idea of what the country should look like versus myself and the three of us, or the three of you guys here as well. But let's not forget that, you know, Uncle Joe, you know, he had the thought that Antifa was just an idea, you know, not an organization. Right. So, you know, let's not forget that. Now, I realize there's been other times where he's contemned, you know, Antifa as well. But, you know, here's my point. He gets a pass for saying Antifa was an idea, not an organization, and that's okay. But Trump saying, let's peacefully protest, let's peacefully walk over to the Capitol, that doesn't get a pass?
I know. And by the way, it's not just him. You got what was his name? I'm drawing a blank now, that called it a myth. Gerald Nadler, okay, said that the violence that is being claimed is a myth, that it's not even actually really happening. Can you imagine if Donald Trump said, oh, there wasn't really violence January 6th. That's just a myth, you know. So, no, it's a great point. So, Roger, what's your take on that and kind of the double standard at play here, the shock and outrage over suddenly Donald Trump can't use the word fight. By the way, I got to say, Roger, I loved what Rand Paul said in his speech yesterday when he said to in the floor of the Senate, I want the Democrats to raise their hands if they've ever given a speech that says, take back, fight for your country. Who hasn't used the word fight figuratively? Are we now going to impeach every politician who's used the word fight figuratively in a speech? Shame, shame on these unhinged partisans. I could not agree with him more.
Yeah, it is. It's true. The double standard is shocking. As a matter of fact, I just saw a headline from the Babylon Bee that made me smile, that said the Democrats are announcing that they're going to retroactively, or they're going to impeach every Republican president in American history, right, just because the Republican Party is so bereft of values and things like that. I mean, I guess the old idiom is, if it weren't for double standards, the left would have no standards at all. I mean, that's what we're dealing with here, is the complete disregard for campaign rhetoric, do as I say, not as I do, or don't listen to what I say unless I want you to be, you know, motivated in voting for me. And hopefully we'll see this play out relatively quickly. I know that the theater of, you know, well, we can't get in the way of President Biden's first 100 days, so let's go ahead and move the impeachment trial to when? Let's move it to the first week of sweeps. Hey, that'll be perfect. Yeah, the second week in February, so we've got the Nielsen ratings going on, and it's going to be political theater, and everyone's going to make their speeches, and they'll get their long, drawn-out sound bites, and it'll go everywhere they want it to go for the month of February, because they realize, I mean, deep down at the bottom of this, we've brought this up several times, but to reiterate the point, Donald Trump was big business for the left-leaning media, and they need him, desperately need him. So if they can drag this thing out for another month or so, you know we're going to see failed Trump policies. All of those executive orders you were talking about earlier, Joe Biden is just reversing the Trump policies that were reversing the bad Obama policies. So, I mean, when you get right down to it, I mean, there was no reason for Trump to issue executive orders when he first got into office, just like there wasn't a real reason for Barack Obama to do the same. But Biden's up there going, wait, I'm Obama Mach 2. You know, I'm the third term, mm-hmm. So I've got to get back in this. But it's the third term, but now he's got the squad in his ear, too, saying you've got to be more progressive. And that's why I think the executive orders he's going to sign today are all about climate change as a matter of national security. But no one calls him on that. But Donald Trump saying we got to fight like hell, and all of a sudden he's inciting a riot. Ridiculous.
I know.
You know, let me just jump in real quick, because I appreciate what you guys are saying. I'm not trying to undercut anything you're saying here. But, you know, we know this to be true. We know that there's a double standard. The mainstream media controls the narrative. Liberals, progressives apparently are in. You know, anybody with conservative values or a sense of American patriotism is out right now. So what does this represent other than just whining? Like, because I sometimes catch myself doing the same thing, you know, that we're talking about. Look at the double standard. Can you even believe this? But it's real, and it's not going away. And I guess maybe because of all the young people that have been coming out of liberal universities and stuff over the last 4 or 5 decades, you know, this mindset is what it is. So I just think that we need to double down as believers, and then as conservatives, believers first, conservatives second, you know, to be very careful about what we say. because it can and will be used against us in a double standard kind of fashion. And the same rules don't apply to people who disagree with that kind of, you know, with a conservative mindset. So I don't know, but to just on the backside always say, well, look, it's a double standard. What about Gerald Nadler and stuff? I know it. I'm as frustrated as any of you guys would be about the very same things, but it doesn't change anything to just point it out. We have to have a better strategy, and I don't know what that is per se, because it is what it is, but I think that we need to take into account that just whining about it isn't, I'm not saying you're whining, I'm saying you're pointing it out, but just pointing it out, just constantly bringing it up, doesn't mean anything to people in Congress, doesn't mean anything to the most of the American people that watch the mainstream media.
You know, Neil, I'm going to partially agree with you, but partially push back also. I agree with you that it's not enough just to, as you say, whine about it, okay? And I do think that we need to somehow move forward in utilizing this in a way that's effective that causes change. But I would argue there is, in fact, intrinsic value in bringing it up. And I don't see it as whining about it, but I do see it as bringing it up to make people aware that that we cannot and should not allow ourselves to be put on the defensive for anything and everything that we say that we're told is shocking and outrageous. But what we need to do is say, no, this is not shocking. This is not outrageous. Here's some perfect examples of this. Democrats say the very same thing, and it's not even controversial. It's not even newsworthy. Republicans says the very same thing, and now suddenly everybody's shocked. And what happens is we end up on the defensive to where we can never speak. It's part of the censor culture. You better keep your mouth shut, because anything that you say, I will somehow, some way twist it into something that's racist, sexist, shocking, hateful. And before you know it, it's like you can't go to Baskin Robbins and order vanilla ice cream, because then it's like, oh, well, that's a code. Notice you passed up the chocolate to get the vanilla. What kind of secret race is they? And then before you know it, other conservatives are wincing, going, yeah, you really need to be more careful in your selection of ice cream, because that is kind of a potential coded dog whistle. It's like, no, stop it. I'm not going to walk around on eggshells and be afraid to talk openly, because everything I say, if I don't say it with surgical precision, is going to be twisted into something wrong. And that's why I think there is value in saying enough is enough. Look, this is not a shocking or controversial thing that this Republican said, and here's my evidence for this. Here's what the Democrats said, 10 times harsher than that, and it wasn't even a news story, let alone controversial, let alone shocking. That tells me it's fake outrage. Knock it off. Let's have a conversation. So I don't see it as whining. I see it as a valuable point to bring this stuff up.
Of course, and there are important times when we need to do just exactly what you're saying, to give a defense. And really, ultimately, that's what we do with our faith as well. And we know in the end that the way that leads to life is narrow, the one that leads to destruction is broad. So since it's not our apologetics about our faith are not going to be a winning formula if you're looking for the masses to join you. But I think that's probably the case here too. And I'm not trying to be a fatalist. I'm just saying that spending all of our time trying to win these kind of arguments is going to be useless. It might be important in individual conversations or at specific times, but by and large, the culture has moved on and is now embracing stuff like cancel culture. And I think we have to learn how to work within the rules as they apply today, because, you know, to say, well, this wasn't the way it was in the 1950s. People used real decorum. They treated each other with kindness and respect. They used to say, my distinguished colleague over here on the other side of the aisle. Forget it. Those days are over with. Now people just on the left can throw bombs at the right and they get away with it. The right, if they try to do it, get called out as hypocrites or racists or xenophobic or whatever. And I just don't see it as a winning formula. I think we have to be more inspired from above, you know, to get godly values somehow into the process, because we're not going to win just using fleshly means. I disagree.
And I'm on Bob's side on this one, Neil. And we talked about this yesterday on my program for a few minutes. And so tell me that Elijah with the prophets of Baal was not inspired by God to mock the prophets of Baal and do what he did on top of the mountain, Mount Carmel. So tell me that he wasn't inspired by God to do what he did.
Yeah, but he was upholding godly truth. I don't think that...
And we can do the same thing.
Okay, is it godly truth, for instance, to bring up the Gerald Nadler? By the way, I was as ticked off as you were when Gerald Nadler said what he said. But is that going to help Donald Trump not be impeached? Is anybody going to accept that as real evidence?
No, and no, and yeah. maybe, and I'm not meaning just on the impeachment side. I'm just meaning in general, I think we need to call out the other side on an ongoing basis when they're doing things to either tear down the Christian faith, tear down the country, which in some cases is one and the same. And I think that's our duty to do so.
Or okay. falsely accusing us of saying things that are shocking and racist when they're really not shocking and racist.
True. But again, that leaves us on the defense. We're on the defense. We're constantly defending. Where's the offense? Like, how do we build bridges? How do we make gains? How do we win the hearts of people who are locked into the mindset of the other side right now? I don't see that happening by and large. I see a lot of defensiveness. I'm not talking about this conversation. I'm talking about in conservative politics generally, in what we see every single day playing out in the mainstream media. I just see that we're constantly on the defense. We have no strategy. We're not moving forward. Largely when it comes to, you know, let me just real quick. When Focus on the Family founded the Family Research Council back, I don't know, early 80s or mid 80s or something, the purpose behind the way that the Family Research Council was going to operate was what was called reason, principled persuasion. They were going to win arguments over the long haul through reason, principled persuasion. And I think pretty much they still adhere to it. And they've been successful in many ways. But they haven't changed the heart of the culture. We're still losing this battle long term. And, you know, while I think reason, principle, persuasion makes sense, ultimately, just always being on the defensive isn't good enough. Like it really isn't about us. You know, men will revile you and persecute you and say all manner of evil against you falsely on account of me, Jesus said. But let's rejoice in that reality. You know, we're not going to win this thing in the flesh. We win in Christ. We win in the end. You can read the last two chapters of Revelation. But all of this represents temporal stuff, largely. And I'm just saying, I think there's a bigger call that's on the life of the believer, and we shouldn't be totally focused on just being upset about what the other side's saying about us all the time.
And Roger, I know we got to take a break, but I know you want to respond too.
Yeah, well, I'll respond as best I can on the other side of this break as this edition of the National Crawford Roundtable podcast continues.
Be transformed by the Word of God with Alistair Begg and Truth for Life. Every weekday, Alistair Begg teaches the Bible through in-depth verse-by-verse attention to the Word of God. You can listen to Truth for Life on your local Crawford Broadcasting Station or listen online at truthforlife.org. Please support this important ministry with your donations at the truthforlife.org website or by calling 888-588-7884, and be sure to let them know you heard about Truth for Life from the National Crawford Roundtable podcast.
Continuing on with the National Crawford Roundtable podcast, along with Bob Duco, Neil Boron, John Rush, I'm Roger Marsh, and we're having a spirited discussion about how do you call out the hypocrisy of the left, how do you call out the downright evil of some of the things that they say. And I think the balance for us, I'm really just enjoying this here. I mean, I made myself some popcorn. I'm just listening to you guys going back. It's a good – this is the reason why I love this podcast, and I know that thousands of people are enjoy tuning in every week, is because we can look at an issue. We can look at an issue back and forth like this. But I think that the core of it is, to Neil's point about, you know, what, you know, Bob and John, absolutely right. You got to call it out when you see it. To Neil's point, though, the question is, how long do we stay there? You know, do we run the risk of losing our effectiveness, losing our saltiness, if you will, in the conversation by giving the impression that all we're doing is whining? And Rand Paul's name keeps coming up in the conversation today here, and I think he's a great example of how do you call it what it is, but then come up with some proactive ways to move forward and not just get stuck in the wine category. We literally come to bat as conservatives, and especially as Christians, with two strikes against us every time we get into a battle with somebody on the left. And so the idea that we can't move forward in these dialogues and in these conversations, we just have to remember, you've got one swing at this. You really honestly do, and from where I stand. So yes, do you call it out, but it's kind of like being on a church council. If you come up with a great idea for the church, be ready to be named chairman of the committee that's going to put it in place.
Yeah. You know, John, I guess for me, one of the John Rush, one of the reasons why I see a lot of value in calling the Democrats on the carpet for this is because I want to educate the viewing and listening public. I want to educate them to the feeble Jedi mind tricks of the left so that the listener and the viewer will not believe the accusation against something that the conservative said that is supposedly really bad. And then the idea is, no, wait a minute, it's actually not really bad. And I want to throw out one quick example to you and then get your take on this. I was doing a bit on my show about fake outrage. And I was coming up with some of the fake outrage examples from the left over the last 4 years. And one of them I came up with in the list I just happen to think of now was the use of the word lynching. Now, I don't know if anybody remembers this, but when Trump was impeached for the Ukrainian phone call, Trump tweeted that this is a lynching of the president of the United States. And because he used the word lynching, we were told by the media, by Democrats, by CNN, by everybody else, that that was a shocking, shocking racist disregard and minimizing of what black people went through in lynching and how grossly inappropriate for that to be done. So I went back and I did some research and I saw that in 1998, when Bill Clinton was impeached by the Republicans, the people who openly used the word lynching to describe that were then Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, John Kerry, Danny Davis, Patrick Kennedy, by the way, a senator named Joe Biden, to Wolf Blitzer on CNN. This is a lynching that they're doing. Jim McDermott said Republicans are going to, quote, find a rope and a tree in lynching Bill Clinton. Gregory Meek's Gerald Nadler used the term as well as the Baltimore Sun newspaper, New York Times multiple times, CNN, and on down the line. Then when Hillary Clinton was being investigated for her email server, that was called a lynching, okay, on CNN multiple times, on CBS. Hillary Clinton said this on MSNBC. CNN repeatedly said that. Even the Washington Post, October 31st, 2016, said that this was a lynching of Hillary. Over and over and over, John, they used the word lynching. But in 2018, when Donald Trump said, hey, this is a political lynching, the left went crazy. They said, that's racist. That's demeaning of actual lynchings that happen to black people. And what happened was a bunch of Trump supporters winced and went, oh, I wish he'd stop tweeting. I wish that he'd be more careful with his words. Right. I really wish. And that's why I'm saying, no, stop it. Don't drink the Kool-Aid. Quit falling for them telling us how we're supposed to feel.
We can go down to the pronoun challenge, I guess you could call it as well, Bob. Similar situation on that end of things, and so much to talk about in the future. That no, you are correct, and I am one that says we stand our ground, and you have to educate, and you know, we do it in a nice and in a Christian-like manner. But we've got to educate; otherwise, we're going to lose this battle forever.
Absolutely. You know, to just further explain what I'm trying to say, and I don't know that I've made a lot of sense today, but there's two sides to the gospel. The bad news is that we're sinners separated from God and deserving of death and eternal separation from God. The good news is that Jesus came to rectify that so that we can be forgiven of sin and have eternal life and live with God forever in eternity. I think there's totally a place for both sides of the gospel. You have to understand the one to better understand the other. And so pointing out these things, Bob, what you just shared, I mean, all of the examples of Democrats using the word lynching and then turn around and Donald Trump uses it once, obviously represents hypocrisy. There's a double standard beyond measure that goes on every single day in politics. But to ultimately say, okay, that's it, we've proven there's a double standard, is not a winning formula in the end. Somehow, we have to capture the hearts and minds of people and maybe even some reasonable minds on the other side of the political aisle who would say, you know what, you're right. And as a result, I'm willing to listen to what else you have to say. I just think that what I'm trying to say is that conservatives have to move away from just pointing out all the problems on the other side of the aisle and start providing some real solutions on our side of the aisle. I mean, you just said earlier, Mitch McConnell only wants to get reelected and doesn't care if the Republicans are not in power. I realize it was a conspiracy theory you were pushing, conspiracy theorist that you are. But on the other hand,
says Q.
I just want to say in the end, I don't think that it's going to be helpful to Republicans to only focus on what the other side's doing wrong.
Well, I'll tell you, Neil, you had me until you said reasonable minds on the other side of the aisle. Then I was like, okay, well.
Oh, but see, that's the point. Are you telling me there's no reasonable minds?
I think there's a few.
I'm kidding.
Yeah. very lively discussion. I tell you, I love the iron sharpening iron discussions that we have on these issues. And we're unfortunately out of time, but I just want to encourage everybody again, go to CrawfordMediaGroup.net and you can access all the archives of the podcast. You can also listen to us at Apple, Stitcher, TuneIn, and more. We'd love a 5-star rating from you. If you go to CrawfordMediaGroup.net, please click on the Compassion International link and sponsor one of those children, if you would, for $38 a month. And John Rush out of Denver, Roger Marsh from the People's Republic of California, Neil Q. Boron, who is podcasting with his new co-host, the Buffalo Fuzzy Hat Guy. Myself, Bob Duco. Guys, always great talking with you. Look forward to next week.
Thanks, Bob.
See you, Bob. Right.
You bet. We'll see you. God bless everybody. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast, a view of today's culture through a biblical lens, brought to you by Compassion International, a worldwide ministry bringing hope and Jesus to children in need. Visit CrawfordMediaGroup.net and click on the Compassion logo to sponsor a child. You can download this podcast from Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and more, and it's also available at CrawfordMediaGroup.net. You can give this podcast a 5-star rating on your Apple app, and be sure to look for the notification on your National Crawford Roundtable Podcast app for when the next weekly edition is ready for you to hear. This has been a Crawford Media Group production.